Our Bible reading this evening is from the first chapter of the Gospel of Mark and the first five verses. It's on page 1002 if you have a church Bible. The beginning of the Gospel about Jesus Christ, the Son of God. It is written in Isaiah the prophet, "I will send my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way. A voice of one calling in the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord, make straight paths for him." And so John came, baptizing in the desert region and preaching a baptism of repentance for the forgiveness of sins. The whole Judean countryside and all the people of Jerusalem went out to him. Confessing their sins, they were baptized by him in the River Jordan.
John 1:1-8 on page 1063. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. There came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light.
The significance of having two readings and why those two will become clear shortly. But first of all, I beg you to humour me. Because what happens when you sit listening to a sermon is you sit listening to a sermon. But I actually would like you to stand and move. No! I'm moving the radio mic. Because what I want us to do is to spread out across the church in a continuous line from, well, it doesn't matter if it's continuous at all, but in a line from that wall to that wall, depending on our personal preference. There is no right, there is no wrong. Well, there is, because it's true to yourself. Be true to yourself. So I'm going to give four categories, and they are all perfectly random. And in each one, I trust that there is a difference of view. So the first one is on poetry. Do you love poetry? Do you think poetry is glorious and wonderful? More people should read poetry. Poetry is fantastic. In which case, the more you love it, the closer you go to that wall there. Do you think poetry is just awful and nobody should ever write poetry and you are... your life has been blighted by the fact you were made to learn poems at school, so you hate it, and in that case, go and stand by that wall there. Or if you're kind of, well, yeah, some of it's good, but on the whole, I really don't care, and yeah, some bits I like here, but other bits I don't, then you're around the middle. So on the more people that join in, the clearer it will be. The more you love it, the nearer that wall you are. The more you can't stand it, the nearer this wall you are. And hopefully we'll have quite a spread. Bit of an outlier here. And it'd be interesting to see if we get four people who, some people who stand for all four, smack in the middle. So, just have a look. Hi, Fiona. I thought we might be on opposite sides. Now, the thing is, that's okay. And this is okay. Wherever you are, it's okay. But we are all different. Next one. When you have a train to catch, now, you haven't got an interview. You're just going to London to go and see something, just going to visit a museum or go to a show or something. And you've got hours. So are you the sort of person that gets to the station so early, you could actually catch the train beforehand. in which case you're that wall over there. Or are you the sort of person that gets to the station so late that actually you might be catching the next train? So next train is that wall, earlier train is that wall. If you're kind of always there about 3 minutes before, just in time, this is early. You get there so early, you could catch the train before. Oh, the one before that, you're right by the wall. Oh, right, oh, yes. Now, this is fine if you're married to someone and the two of you are the same, me and Heather. Although Heather's actually nearer that wall there, but it does mean we always have time for a coffee, which is great. However, in some families, one person and their spouse are wildly different, in which case there could occasionally be conflict. Why didn't you do that before? Why aren't you ready? And all that kind of thing. Okay, and a well-balanced offspring, right. Nobody knows who it is on the tape. Thirdly, yesterday, Mrs. Coupland and I went to the Chinese buffet place in the rotunda called Kung Fu Banquet, is it called? Kung Fu Buffet. Now, if you've ever been to one of these, there's all sorts of dishes spread out. Imagine you go to one of these places and there's, let's say, 42 different dishes spread out. From Western food to Chinese food to Japanese food to Korean food to Russian food. If you're by this wall, you will only pick the things that you know what they are and you're sure you like them. If you're by that wall, you won't bother with the things you know you like because you know you like them, but actually you'll go for the things. You're not even quite sure what they are, but they look different and fascinating. Ooh, yes, camel's eyeballs. Never tried those. So I'll try anything. I'm over by that wall there. I'll actually stick to what I know, and really, please, don't make me go there. And if you think, okay, well, I'll mostly stick to what I know, but maybe try one or two things. Hang on. This is conservative, yes. Yeah, definitely. I'm here. Now, this one, I speak from experience, doesn't matter if your spouse is totally different. That's fine. I just eat the pizza and she eats the camel's eyeballs. That's great. Lovely spread again. See what a diversity of people we have here. Last one. Thank you so much for humouring me and joining in. You're doing wonderfully. You've got 14 days holiday. 14 days. On this wall, you spend 14 of them on the beach doing absolutely nothing. On that wall, you spend all 14 of them visiting a different place, seeing a different thing, that you're a town or a monastery or an art gallery, and no days at all on the beach, lying and doing nothing. In here, you've got 7 days resting and relaxing, 7 days doing excursions and visiting things. So that end, beach, that end, cities. Yeah, about 2/14 in. Okay. Again, interesting to check how the families spread out. Source of family tension. If one of you wants... Oh, no, that's good. One of you wants to spend a whole holiday on the beach and everyone's going, oh, please, can we go somewhere? I am so bored. Or, as in my family, if you're saying, let's go to another city, and your daughter is saying, please, can we go to the beach, please? Just notice, we're all different. Thank you ever so much. You can sit down again. Now, you knew already before you came tonight that we are all different. It's a truism. But it's actually really helpful to see it expressed like that. I don't mind which microphone you... I'll go to the lectern, yeah. It doesn't matter whether you love the beach and want to spend every day on the beach, you love the activity and cities and all that, it's fine. One is good, the other is good. They are all good, they are all right. But what we find again and again, what comes out in human relationships, is that deep down, without really thinking about it, we assume that everyone else is like us. And it tends to be a shock when they're not. Now, it might not be when you go to a restaurant, but it comes out in relationships in all sorts of ways. And it might be with a friend, might not be, you know, if you have a romantic relationship with someone, if you get married to someone, it can be catastrophic to discover some huge gulf between you. But it works itself out in all sorts of ways. So, for example, my wife, Heather, was working at a Bible college with a friend called Jackie. And they were doing one of those personality test things where you sort of answer questions to work out your personality type. And the question came up, would you, when making a phone call, rehearse beforehand what you're going to say or just say whatever comes? And the friend, Jackie, who was reading it out, went, what a ridiculous question. I mean, who would ever rehearse what they're going to say before they bring somebody up? Stunned silence, and Heather goes, in a little voice, I would. And Jackie's like, what? Really? Really? And they had a really productive conversation, which brought out the fact that when they were off one particular evening, so they worked together in this Bible college, and they had evenings off occasionally, and Jackie would say to Heather, do you want to go out for a drink this week? And Heather would say, yes, that would be lovely. And then spend the week in an agony waiting to know, which evening do we mean? Because I need to know, because I like to plan. Where Jackie's like, okay, you know, one day, yeah, right, let's do it. And so as a result of this conversation, Jackie said, so would it actually be helpful if I said, would you like to go out for a drink this week, say, Thursday? And they went, yes! And their friendship blossomed even more than before. Because they were so different, but they never realized it. And it just needed bringing out. To give you another example, this is a married couple, Bill Hybels, the leader of founder of Willow Creek Community Church in the States, writes about his marriage to his wife, Lynn. And not long after they got married, he said to Lynn, I really fancy a holiday. What do you think? And she said, sounds great. And he said, okay, I was thinking maybe I'll go in next month or the month after. And she's, what do you mean you'll go? And he said, well, I was thinking of taking a holiday, you know, just going off for the weekend. She went, what, without me? He went, yeah. So she then rang up her parents and said, it's over, he doesn't love me. Now, unbeknown to the two of them, in his family, he had grown up with his parents, yes, loving each other, devotedly, dearly, but each of them doing their own thing. And so every so often, Dad, this is America, so every so often Dad would go off with the guys hunting in the woods, while Mum would go off with a group of her girlfriends to a spa to have a chill relaxation time. And that was perfectly normal. Whereas in her family, Mum and Dad were like joined at the hip. And if they went out for a coffee, they'd always go together. And if she needed to go clothes shopping, he'd even go with her. So for her, this was like, this is unheard of, you know. What are you doing going off on your own? Whereas for him, that's perfectly normal. And neither is right and neither is wrong. They're just different. So it's really good if we recognize, and this is the first thing I really want to bring out tonight. It's very obvious, but it's so true. You're okay being different. And it's okay if other people are different from you. Because some of us have such a sense that, well, I must be in the wrong, and that must be the right way. Or alternatively, if we've been brought up with a very strong sense of self-confidence, well, those stupid people must all be wrong, because I know I'm right. And what I want to take us deeper into tonight is the fact that it's the same with our faith. Because an awful lot of aspects of how, as Christians, we grow and mature and get fed is actually to do with our personality as much as it is to do with the truth of our faith. And I don't know if you noticed, there was a slight difference between those two readings. Because God, in his wisdom, has chosen writers of the Gospels who have different personalities. So both of them are writing about John the Baptist. This is exactly the same thing. It's the introduction to Mark, it's the introduction to John, and they're both introducing you to the character of John the Baptist. Mark is very factual, very down to earth, very pithy. And so he gives you the background. Here's what it says in the Old Testament. And then, here we go. And so, John came, baptizing in the desert, preaching baptism of repentance for the forgiveness of sins. Let me introduce you to John straight in. Here's the character. Here's where he is. Here's who he is. Here's what he is doing. John, unlike Mark, is a theologian, is a poet, is a wordsmith, is a dreamer. And so he talks about the light shining in the darkness. There came a man sent from God. His name was John. What did he do? Well, it doesn't really tell you. Where was he? Doesn't really tell you. But who was he? Well, he was a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. Do you see the difference? You've got Mark. Now, Mark, when he writes very sort of staccato Greek prose. His favourite word is the Greek word euthyos, which means immediately. But because it's embarrassing, if you're reading the Bible translation and they put immediately every time he uses that word, they kind of sometimes put immediately, they sometimes put at once, sometimes they put straight away to make it a bit less kind of boom, boom, boom. But actually, he writes in that very staccato style. John, on the other hand, writes fluid, flowing, glorious prose, taking you into realms of the imagination. And it depends on your personality, which you will like most. So there am I by that wall, can't stand poetry. Love Mark! John's okay. Fiona loves poetry, over by that wall, loves John. Even the start. Do you know, verse 1. The beginning of the gospel, the good news about Jesus, who's the Messiah, that's what Christ means, the Son of God. There I am, put it on the table straight away. I'm telling you about Jesus, I'm telling you he's the Messiah, I'm telling you he's the Son of God. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Which word? What's the word? Tell me the word. Which word is it? Takes you quite a while to get to Jesus. But the reason he does that is because he takes you on a journey. And you go on an imaginative journey, and like, whoa. And then when you meet Jesus, it's like, wow, that's Jesus. That's who you've been talking about. So it's good to have Mark, and it's good to have John. It's good to have both in the Bible. And actually, it occurred to me as I was writing this that it's one of the strengths of St. Paul's that we have a preaching team with Fiona and Simon. And also with Glyn, and with Dale, and with Kerry. It's good that we have different personalities with different backgrounds and different aspects and different characters. That is a real strength. Because in the church, we need one another. Neither is right, neither is wrong. Both are right and good and different. So think a bit more about your Bible reading. Because what I want to say again and again tonight is it's really helpful to know yourself. I know my character now, after all these years. I know what kind of bits of the Bible I really love and I keep going back to and I get the most out of. It's stories, it's narrative, it's event, it's history. So, Genesis and Exodus. Then I kind of, well, don't we all get a bit bogged down in Leviticus and Numbers, Deuteronomy? And then Judges. I love Judges. Judges is a great book. And Samuel and Chronicles, fantastic stories, great characters, great plot. And then the Gospels, they're fantastic. Psalms, frankly, I could take them or leave them. Could leave them out of the Bible. I wouldn't think you'd lose a lot. Isaiah does go on a bit. Jeremiah, even worse. Ezekiel, what was he on? And the letters, well, yeah, some of them are good, but some of them, you know, oh, Hebrews, my goodness, it's like trying to grasp a bar of soap. Now, they're all good. They're all scripture. They can all teach me. But my personal preference, the things that I go back to again and again, the things that feed me most, they're these stories. If you're not like me, then perhaps you will find much more enjoyment in reading Psalms, Isaiah, the letters, Revelation. I know that's a weakness on my part, so I try and make sure in our preaching series that we include both. We don't just do my favourite purple passages, my best bits. We're doing Romans 12 to 15 in our morning sermon series this very term. Give you another example. So that's reading the Bible. Think about prayer. The way we pray is deeply affected by our personality. This is a picture of the most recent St. Paul's night. Some of you are on the picture, if you can spot yourselves. So we have about 40 minutes of quiet. That's a heck of a long time if you are a person that likes conversation and noise and being surrounded by other people. We finished the 40 minutes this month, and my wife said to me, "Oh, that wasn't nearly long enough." I said, "Yes, but for other people it was eternity." So because we're all different, it's good to know, you know, do I like silence and space and try and seek that out? But if I find that difficult, then actually maybe a little bit at a time. So, for example, we have an annual staff retreat, and I picked up this idea from my previous parish where I was a team vicar. And the team rector, when I went there, who was the boss over the team, was a quiet, contemplative type. And so through the programme, there'd be these long stretches of quiet when we'd have time to ponder and reflect and go for a walk and rest and pray. But his replacement while I was there was a total activist, an extrovert, a person who, when they went to the supermarket, his wife would actually leave him talking to the staff, telling them about Jesus, because he just loved getting into conversation with people. Halfway through the first session of quiet, the piano started playing, and it's John playing the piano. You think, do you not understand what quiet means? But the fact was, he was deprived from talking to people, so like, whoa, let's have some music then. We are all different. Neither is right, neither is wrong, but we need to be aware and to make space for that. We're all different. So at St. Paul's night, we have different prayer stations, because I'm conscious that not everyone will cope with if we just had 40 minutes quiet and nothing. There's always a Bible study, because some people are word-based. There's always something visual, because some people are visual-based. There's nearly always, try and always have something to do with your fingers. So last one, we had making jigsaw puzzles, or it might be drawing a picture, or creating something, because we are all different. And different things feed us and help us and nurture us. And it's good to know what those things are and make sure we fit those into our lives. And if we're struggling with something in our church life, in our Christian life, maybe it's because it's not our natural preferred style. And struggles can be good because we can learn through them, but we need to make sure we've got the other as well. I don't know if you're aware of all the other services that we have. Sorry, that's so tiny. That is our new website, which is under construction and very nearly ready to go live. But we have four different types of service. So if you came here at 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning, on the first Sunday of the month, I'm wearing robes. There is no music whatsoever. And the language is, "Yea, verily, Lord, thou dost vouchsafe unto us," and so on, from the 1662 Book of Common Prayer. The people that come absolutely love it. They go out the door purring, saying, "Simon, thank you so much. Those words are so beautiful." 6:30, with that wacky guitar music at the front, you know. Whoa, really? No, you know, not my style. We're different. And then I really noticed when I first came here, it dawned on me that actually you get more and more horizontal as the day goes on. You start in 1662, then you go to sort of traditional common worship, still got robes, got hymns, and it's quite traditional. Then at 10:30, it's a bit more laid back and the children are running everywhere, and at 6:30, we're like chilled and mellow. And you see, because we're all different. So what we're trying to do is provide that smorgasbord, that mixed buffet, where different people with different learning styles and different ways of relating to God and growing in our faith can actually learn in our own way. But having said that, we are all evangelical. We are all word-based. We are all biblical. There's never a whiff of incense. There are no statues you can go and light a candle in front of. There are no candles except the two on the communion table. If you want that, then you just go down the road. You go to St. Luke's, a neighbouring parish. And there was one dear lady who came to our 9 o'clock service when she moved to the area. And she came week after week and she grinned and bore it, but she really didn't enjoy it all that much. And then she discovered St. Luke's and she started going there and she's happy as Larry. Because we are all different. And that's the way she loves to worship. Now, I have invited my colleague Martin Hislop to preach here, and he has invited me to preach there because we actually worship the same God, we believe all the same things in the creed, but we express that in very different ways. Just how different became clear to me as we processed in, and I knew where I was supposed to be sitting, so I sat down and then realized that everyone else had carried on processing forward to sense the altar. And then come back, and I thought, oh, I think I might have been supposed to go, but I'm not really sure. We are all different. And that has led over the years to what, it's fascinating, just Google the words, worship wars. My goodness, there are so many sermons on worship wars. It's a really big thing in America, obviously. My dad was a United Reformed Church minister, and he used to say, very much tongue-in-cheek, well, he would say, the Anglicans do things their way and we do things God's way. It's all the same. But we are all different. We do express ourselves in different ways. And the thing to do is to say, St. Luke's is great if that's the way that you relate to God. We're great if we're the way you relate to God. But what so often happens is that we say, of our own church, oh, didn't like the worship this morning. Far too loud, could hardly hear myself think. You know, oh, and that drum beat, it gives me a headache. And someone else comes out going, oh, the worship this morning was so dull. There was no rhythm, you know, it was just dreary and floaty. And you can't please all the people all the time. In fact, I say to Liz that if we get complaints all the time, then we're probably doing about right. Because other people will say, why do we always have new songs? I don't even know all the ones we know. And then there's another new one. Other people going, why are we always singing the same songs? When are we going to have some new ones? And other people say, why did we sing that song 16 times? Actually, it was 2.5. But it just went, you know, I sang it once. I meant it. I got it. Can we move on? Here's the difference between Heather and myself. We sang, we went to Kingsgate. For our last joint Churches Together service. And the worship was fantastic. Those of you who were there, I hope you agree that Lou, who leads their worship, was just on fire. But there was one song, I think we sang it 8 times. And by the fifth, I'm kind of ready to move on. I let Heather carry on. She was loving it. She just, you know, really happy to sing it the sixth and the seventh. You know, why have we stopped after 8? I'm really getting into it. Because we're all different, and she's loving it, and that's great. Another time, we've moved on, and I'm loving it, and that's great. And the other thing is the content. The Wesleys wrote dense theology in their songs, and there are some modern worship songs, Graham Kendrick particularly liked writing them, that have dense theology in them. Stuart Townend does it too. So you really think about what you're singing. Others are really simple and straightforward. I once read a writer who was basically critiquing this, not a big fan of charismatic worship, saying, I went to a service of worship the other day, and these are the words they put up. This shows how long ago it was on the overhead projector. It said, Jesus, 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 Jesus. And underneath it said, words copyright. Now, those people who say, oh, these modern worship songs, they're so shallow, they have so little theology, so little content. What they're failing to see is actually what you're doing is something like monastic plain chant, something like Teze songs from a liberal Catholic perspective. They are entering into the presence of God and allowing the words to speak to you and you to speak to God in relationship rather than engaging your brain to think about new theology. Both are right, both are good. And it's good to have both. So, to just bring things to a conclusion, the first and most important thing I want to say tonight is know yourself. Know what feeds you, know what blesses you. Make sure you're getting that. And if I do that, first of all, that will help me not to feel a failure or inferior, because other people, they all seem to have it sus. They're all growing and feeding and doing wonderfully, and I'm not. But actually, if I make sure that I'm looking after myself and making sure I'm doing the right things to get myself fed, to grow in my faith, then I will too. But also then, if I know I'm different, I will recognize that other people are not inferior either. Because sometimes Christians have this habit of, oh, you know, when you get to the stage I'm at, you will understand, you know. It can particularly actually be something that we suffer from as a charismatic evangelical church. Other places, oh yes, I went through that phase. One day, it's, you know, you'll grow out of it. No, actually I've grown into this. We can all be insecure, and so we look down on others. If you know yourself, then it will help you not to look down on others, but also not to look up to others in an unhelpful way. And I've given you a handout about faith and personality, which I'm not going to refer to at all, but that's just to help you to reflect. So what am I like? What does help me? And the reason for doing the thing across the church is because none of us is generally outside the wall, you know. We're somewhere on a continuum. There's a bit of everything, a bit of both. And in this on this particular day, that can help me. On another day, that might help me. But to know ourselves can be really, really helpful. But the second thing I want to say is, recognize that because there's truth in all, don't assume, well, this is what feeds me, and this is what I'm like, and I will never be any different. Because actually, we can all change. We change over time, we change in different circumstances, and God always has more for us. So don't make the assumption that because I'm like this, I wouldn't enjoy that. Because actually, when I go to it, I'm like, oh, actually, I really rather did enjoy that. That was actually quite thought-provoking and helpful. I mean, if I've been there and I've discovered, no, I didn't enjoy that, that was really unhelpful, then probably not good to keep flogging myself by going back again and again and again. But unless I try it, I won't know. Because my final point is, God is a God of surprises. He always has fresh things for his people, always has fresh things for his church. And I want to read you a story, a true story, from 1732. 3 years after Johann Sebastian Bach had written his Matthew Passion. When in a large town his Passion music was performed for the first time, with 12 violins, many oboes, bassoons and other instruments, many people were astonished and didn't know what to make of it. In the pew of a noble family in church, many ministers and noble ladies were present who sang the first Passion chorale out of their books with great devotion. But when this theatrical music began, all these people were thrown into the greatest bewilderment, looked at each other and said, "What will become of us?" An old widow of nobility said, "God save us, my children! It's just as if one were at an opera comedy." But everyone was genuinely displeased by it and voiced just complaints against it. There are, it is true, some people who take pleasure in such idle things. See, in its time, the St. Matthew Passion, now seen as a great classic, was seen as revolutionary, radical, and decadent. Whoa, this wild, wacky, rock and roll passion. You know, things change, and God is always moving us on, and something that to one generation seems incredibly brave, daring, and off the wall, to the next generation is passé, an old hat, and really quite trad. God is always moving us on to new things. And God can surprise us in other ways. My best friend, my best mate, is Keith Gateschool, the pastor of Kingsgate Church. And we get together as often as we can, generally about once a month, to talk about theology and talk about what we're preaching on at the time and talk about things going on in our churches. And one day the subject of personality types came up, and we've both done this thing called the Myers-Briggs personality type. Turns out we are complete opposites. Like, everything that I am, he is not. And often in those kind of situations, you think, well, Christians who are opposites, extrovert and introvert, and like truth and like compassion, wouldn't get on. You'd be arguing all the time, but not at all. We actually see very much eye to eye and learn from each other all the time. So we mustn't assume, oh, well, I'm not like that person, I'm not like that church, I won't get anything out of it. Actually, God can surprise us. And finally, that picture was taken on a staff retreat. When I very first went on staff retreat, I thought, well, I'm going to hate this because I hate retreats. I'm actually, although I'm more of an introvert, when it comes to prayer, I'm an activist. I really find it really difficult just to sit and be quiet. And the program, all these bits, quiet. I'm like, oh, no. But over the years, I really came to appreciate it. And one day, I was feeling dry in my spiritual life and thinking, oh, God, you know, please speak to me. Something on this retreat. And I just walked out of the front door of the place where we stay. And in the grass, not many yards from the front door, these flowers were blooming in the grass. They're tiny, as you can perhaps see from the size. Those are ordinary sized leaves. They're not giant. The flowers were tiny. And God said to me, look, just look. Amongst the autumn leaves, I've got beauty, I've got flowers, I've got new things for you. It's like, whoa, thank you. Yeah, okay. In the quiet, in the place where I'm not expecting God to speak, in the quiet where actually I think my personality is unlikely to do anything for me, God speaks and surprises. Because that's the way he is. He is a God who made us. He is a God who loves us. He is a God who wants us to grow and wants to bless us. Always remember that he is, whatever our personality, the God of blessing and surprise.